Could I tell you a little bit about Satan? That in the court of heaven, Satan is the district attorney. He is not, as Christians imagine, the enemy of heaven and the enemy of mankind. He's merely the person who sees the bad side of things and carries out the dirty work.
Something that I find repulsive about, especially monotheistic messianic religion, with a large part of itself, it quite clearly wants us all to die.
A new consciousness is developing which sees the earth as a single organism and recognizes that an organism at war with itself is doomed.
Welcome to Deferred Gnosis. We live in a world of gnosis deferred.
In this show, we will grasp those fleeting eternal truths that can only come through a dialogue of contrasting perspectives.
One of which is my own, Shay Belay. I've been a practicing Satanist for most of my life.
And myself, Matthew Johnson, the secular atheist.
So we're going to talk about that dirty S word, spiritual.
Spiritual experience.
And what it means to me, what it means to Matthew here.
Yes.
I am of a spiritual bent, I suppose. I've evolved to kind of have that attribute about myself.
A spiritual tinge, if you will.
Spiritual, yes. A flavoring. So, I guess we would go to kind of talk about what it means to us, right?
Right.
What is a transcendent experience? What is a spiritual experience? What does it mean for an atheist?
Well, from a secular atheistic perspective, it's actually quite simple. So,
and this is a relatively new idea, though, for atheists, wouldn't you say?
There's a lot of, I would say the majority of the atheist camp currently, these days, contemporarily, is comprised of individuals who are not comfortable with the idea of a quote-unquote spiritual experience.
It's the trappings of those religious types.
Yes, yes. Those yesteryears, the medieval, the Christian, the Catholic.
So,
the mystics,
sure.
The rain dancers.
Sure. Rain dancing and all that sounds fun, by the way.
It does sound like a lot of fun. You just can't take it too seriously. The issue is when we rain dance, we don't expect...
Wait a sec.
Okay.
All right.
I'm sorry.
Grabbing guns already right through the gate.
Coming out swinging. Sorry about that, Shay.
Okay. All right.
Let's ease into this.
Yeah, let's... like any good intimate experience, we should come into this slowly but surely. So, this is a recent thing. What I feel like in the I don't want to say diatribe.
Sure.
I don't want to say diatribe.
Right.
I was about to.
Okay.
In the dialogue.
Yes.
Of the brights.
Oh.
Of the atheists. You don't want me saying that.
That's okay.
Okay.
Go ahead.
There has been the, you know, meditation,
yeah,
and yoga, and even like a little foreplay with Buddhism.
Sure. I would, yeah, not so much atheists in particular, but these things are certainly making their way into the Western world.
They've been in the Western world for a while.
Okay.
Yeah. Come on. But for atheists, it seemed like atheists were naysayers for a long time with any trappings that had anything to do with spirituality.
I definitely think it makes them a little nervous. It puts them on the defensive, of wanting to neglect and deny any sort of, I hate to say it, but the atheists will tend to focus on the mundane and focus on what's directly in front of their nose and tend to reject anything that smells kind of
factual,
spiritual, you know?
Prudes, evidentiary.
Prudes, yeah, factual prudes, that's exactly it, yeah, so... but, you know, the subjective human experience is so much broader than that.
So you think so?
I believe so.
I feel like you're defecting a little bit.
And that could be,
like
that could, that could well be the case. And I'm comfortable with that, again, as a staunch secular atheist.
Very staunch.
Quite staunch. But I think we need to make room for these honest, I stress the word honest, profound experiences that seem to go beyond, and that's where
undeniable.
The word undeniable, honest, undeniable, transcendent experiences, and
what do you think,
we'll use the word transcendent to mean beyond the day-to-day mundane, beyond the normal. We're not talking about picking the kids up from school or you know, carrying out tasks at work. We're talking about these profound emotional experiences that go beyond these mundane. That's how I would define transcendence.
Where do you think they come from? And what is it? What is it for you, though, as a secularist? Would you even call it a spiritual experience? You probably eschew that term.
Yeah, and actually, I would tend to kind of move away from the word spiritual, just only for the sake of its connotation, only for the potential to be misunderstood by people who might be listening to me. I would avoid spiritual. I would try to replace it with transcendent, because I feel like that's a little bit more secular friendly. But what does it mean to me? It means, there's a lot of ways to get there. I tend to be powerfully emotional sometimes. And so if I listen to a great piece of music that really puts me in a place, that's one way to have one of these transcendent experiences. I hate to say it, psychedelics and things like this can really put you...
You don't hate to say that.
Can put you in a place... Perhaps I don't hate so much to say it. Hate's a strong word. Can put you in a place and give you an experience that is definitely not the humdrum norm. And I would definitely call some of the insights and some of the emotive forces involved transcendent.
Absolutely.
Broadening your normal experience, broadening your perspective. You come away from a transcendent experience with a wider horizon, with a greater capacity for emotional experience, for understanding others, for connecting.
How about outside of triggers like psychedelics?
Yeah, well, again,
You mentioned music, right?
Yeah, music is a great way to get there. I myself am not a big, I haven't done a lot of meditation myself, but I have done a lot of reflecting, and that may be synonymous with some sort of meditation, where you sit and you think back and just this reflective experience and trying to figure out where you fit in the world and the universe and the planet. When you really put things into perspective, when you consider things on their actual scale of what you are and where you are, an animal, a mammal on the planet, existing with other mammals and plants and animals and in this solar system, in this galaxy,
sure,
in this universe.
Sure.
If you think long and honestly enough about it, I think that can become a transcendent experience in and of itself.
Sure. I believe that does exist. I mean, from my perspective, I practice magic, the occult. I have had... I've had spiritual experiences of different sorts. I have even, you could even say that I'm comfortable with calling it mystical.
Okay. Now, what do you mean exactly by, I mean, let's just go ahead and,
sure.
I mean, what
sure.
do you mean exactly by mystical? If you were to define the term in your mind,
sure.
from your experiences, what does it mean mystical?
Well, I freely embrace a lot of things that for the longest time are called supernatural.
Mm,
I mean, I'm not going to lie about that.
Okay, sure. Yeah, yeah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to lie about that. Okay. Here. And I'm not afraid of labels. I mean, being a Satanist, there's a bit of fearlessness that comes to play with that.
Okay.
So, and I've also practiced the occult. I do believe in forces outside of science.
You're kind of dancing a fire line, though, wouldn't you say? Because, I mean,
nice choice of words there.
Yeah, just as well as I might alienate myself from a lot of secular atheists.
Sure.
By admitting some semblance of transcendent experience, you may be doing the same with a lot of Satanists with regard to making room for mysticism.
That may be true. Now, let me kind of explain where that sort of comes from. I mean, if you talk about strict Levian Satanism...
Sure.
It has secular underpinnings. But there's room for... I mean, they practice magic.
A lot of rituals
and
on
yeah,
that.
And yeah, there's ritualism and, right. and ceremonial what have you.
Yes.
The... There is a kind of, it's a psychodrama. There is that idea that there's
sure.
psychological benefit from magic.
Right.
But there are those. I mean, if you're going by Levian philosophy, there is room for
a literal,
almost pantheistic kind of room for
a literal invocation of spirits, would you say?
Now we're getting into, literal.
Right.
You're saying like,
I mean,
anthropomorphic,
yeah,
kind of deity.
Yes, yeah, right. I mean, is that where it goes? I mean, certainly LaVey wouldn't have taken it there.
He even talks about, I mean, he says in the Satanic Bible, mm-hmm. and elsewhere,
sure.
He said, you are, as a Satanist, free to kind of, you know, believe in a deity if you're mystically inclined. Because I realize that some people require that, he says.
Mm.
And whatever your understanding or connection to the spiritual, a literal entity, whether it's Satan or something else,
mm.
it is an entity that is not concerned about the living things on the small ball of dirt in a mass, a sea of stars and galaxies. So he left room for that. He left room for interpretation of a force, of a construct. And I very much believe in that. I believe synchronicity. I believe in dreams come to life. I believe in things happening at the right time. I believe in a song coming on at the right time. Just too perfect. Almost like when reality becomes poetic.
So mysticism for you, if I could paraphrase, is there is some sort of supernatural fabric at work.
What's supernatural, though?
Well,
I think that's almost... To me, it's super normal. I think spiritual experience is a part of human experience.
I would agree with that, actually.
I think these are things that are commonplace.
I think
they happen if you're open to it.
Right. I think where we differ a bit is just what we mean by spiritual experience. So, and supernatural. So,
sure.
Supernatural being something like the suspension of natural laws or the suspension of physics as we know it, so that some miracle, quote unquote, can occur. Things at play in the universe that are well beyond human understanding, in fact.
But it's been happening for thousands of years. I mean, science is a great thing. It's a bedrock of a factual reality.
Right.
As we progress in science, I believe that factual reality becomes a bit ambiguous sometimes. At least there's limitations to our current understanding. However,
certainly there are limitations to our current understanding.
I feel that there is phenomena that science hasn't caught up with yet.
Oh, and certainly, well, that's beyond, yeah. Oh, well, yeah, certainly. There's no debate there. Lots of phenomenon occur that we don't have a good scientific explanation for. But I think as time goes on, that line of non-understanding will continue to recede. The human understanding and development of knowledge will continue to grow. And, you know, in a way,
I think some of the things you consider fantastical,
sure,
are going to be proven at some point on a factual basis. I think science will come to prove some of the things which I find as personal truths, and that many find as personal truths.
So, do you mean like something like, say, telepathy or telekinesis? I mean, assuming I'm not saying that.
Of course.
I'm not saying that.
Moving things on the table. We're going to move it to that.
Well, but the fact of the matter is, some people really believe there are geomancers out there.
Sure,
some people really believe something.
Sure, absolutely.
So just for the sake of argument, I would say that presuming these things were real, science, given enough time, and the scientific method would eventually discover the mechanics of the phenomenon.
Sure. I believe, see, for me, and this is where this kind of becomes a difficult conversation to approach, because we're speaking things from, I believe that there is reality that is filtered through personal experience.
Certainly.
And I believe perception becomes reality. And I believe that, is there situations where magic is real, where spirits manifest in whatever form or fashion? I just think that, you know, the idea of the double slit paradox.
Sure. Quantum mechanics we're talking about.
So the idea that observing it changes its form. Our mere perception, measuring it, changes the form in which reality resolves. I think that happens on a macrocosmic level. I think that our perception, if in the right state and the right conditions, can begin to make some of these things that are considered fantastical, in a sense, a reality, at least for that person. Whether you want to call it an imagination gone awry,
I'm perfectly happy with calling it imagination.
Oh, yeah, I know I'm you perfectly, are. I shouldn't even put it there.
Don't feed me this stuff. Yeah, I'm perfectly happy with saying something like, yeah, certainly the subjective experience was X, but actually the objective reality was Y. It was just Y perceived as X.
Well, let's cut to the chase, I suppose. I think spirituality has a benefit. Sure. I don't think that it has to be anchored to what we've been doing for the last 2,000 years. Well, you don't shit in a dirt hole or like in a pit. I mean, we can adapt to our current understanding. And I think spirituality has a place. I think there's benefit. Now, for you, in dialogue with you, I would say that there's a psychological benefit for sure. For like ritualizing, for ceremony, for beliefs.
Right.
I feel it even goes a little bit further.
Maybe I would call it something like ritual therapy, where the act of carrying out the ritual has some emotional value to the participants.
That alone vindicates it.
Don't get me wrong. I'm not out to say that all ritual acts are something we shouldn't do. In fact, I don't have any problem with ritualizing events or carrying
out. Would you ever do it?
Sure, of course I would. Of course I would.
In what fashion? I wonder.
You mean where are my boundaries in terms of what I would do ritualistically? I don't think I have any boundaries. I mean, it's not something that I've had any experience with, really. But it's also not.
A lot of atheists would call that humdrum. I mean, if you were to do anything in that fashion, they'd consider it humdrum. Now, I've known atheists who even engage in, say, occult, you know. Different occult forms.
I'd be willing to dabble in ritual as a mental and emotional exercise. And I'm not saying I would never get anything beneficial out of it. In fact, I'm wide open to the idea that behaving in a certain way with some specific candles lit and saying some special words might in fact do something good for me. And I'm perfectly comfortable with that. Where I part company is in the underpinnings and the mechanics of what's actually happening. So, if you were invoking some particular spirit or deity or energy or force or what have you to achieve some goal, some people would believe in the literal invocation of that. And they think that something is entering into the natural world that was called upon by the acts of the ritual. I just don't believe that's what's going on. I think that, anything that arises in consciousness is merely a result of processes in the brain, and that if you get some emotional catharsis or some benefit,
is it possible that both are true? Is it possible that yes, it is just a psychological experiment?
Sure.
It is just acts in which symbolism carries meaning and creates an emotional response.
Yes, 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 yes.
That. And could it also be, well, there's a transference of energy of some sort. Mm-hmm. There are constructs that we bring to manifest through emotional heightened. I mean, but we're getting really deep into.
Is it possible? Well, I suppose,
I think reality can be both.
Notice how careful I'm being here. I suppose it is possible, but it just seems really
It's difficult to measure. I'll admit that.
It seems very unlikely, and I just would be wary about calling things facts and reality that we don't know for sure that's what's going on. Especially, some of these claims can get really out of hand. And we just need to have a dress code for the kinds of things that we allow ourselves to call facts and reality.
Okay.
The dress code is evidence. The dress code is measurability.
Yeah.
The dress code is fallibility. If an infallible claim is made, we have no way, by definition, to ascertain whether or not it's real. So,
What is real? I hate to ask that. I'm not going to ask that. There is something to say about personal experience.
It's all, yeah. Well, and that's what's so powerful about being human, is everything is personal experience. Everything is color.
Of course.
Everything is.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, I hate to, you know, cover something so obvious and plain, but everything is subjective. Everything is personal experience. Everything is colored by our past, by our genetics, by our what have you.
I think.
Brain chemistry.
If I may adopt a metaphor.
Sure.
I don't care how a soup is made. I don't care what comprises in it, so long as it doesn't make me sick. You know, putting whatever, you know, putting anthrax
bird
in my
feces.
Soup, you know?
Yeah, nobody wants bird feces in their tomato bisque.
Exactly. You're not leaving a used condom in my soup. All that aside,
I'm sure that's happened.
If you've
ever been to Tijuana, I'm sure. Well, anyway.
Well, I'll get a lawsuit out of it. Not if I'm in Tijuana, but if I'm in the States, I sure. If I get a condom in my food, I would be able to seek out some type.
I've had a Band-Aid, and I don't go to that
really?
Ramen place anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't eat.
That's hard.
I'm actually it scarred me for ramen, and I'm just not interested in it. But
well,
anyway,
digress.
You can understand.
Sure. If I'm making a soup,
yeah,
I kind of don't care so much about the ingredients.
Okay.
It's the taste of the soup in the end.
Sure.
So I feel that whatever gets me there. Now, so long as I see results from it.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So there is a bit of evidentiary necessity.
So it's a very pragmatic approach to magic.
Or spiritual experience.
Right.
I feel that if it is just chemicals, wow, this is fucking great. If it is just chemicals, if it is just a myriad of natural processes that are taking place to change my fucking life forever,
because yeah.
a series of events triggered at the right time,
mm-hmm.
wow. I mean, I could just, if it's just that, it's amazing. But I think as humans, I think to live a poetic life, there's something that feels a connectivity to the rest of the world around you. Connectivity to something outside of casual human experience. And sometimes, it is so tangible. I feel like, yes, there has to be physiological changes happening to make this possible. And yes, it borders, or it is deep in the realm of what we would call spiritual, and what we would call supernatural. But to me, it's not supernatural. To me, this was something that existed commonly. I don't think it's just humdrum. I think we can channel this innate need and this innate experience into something beneficial. And it doesn't have to have the fucking religious trappings that we've been burdened with for the last few thousand years. I don't think we need to hurt each other.
Right. Yeah. You know, and again, I'm actually all in favor of channeling the personal psyche in powerful and meaningful and profound ways. And I'm all for experiencing profound and life-changing experiences. I think that these are healthy, and I would agree that they're natural.
Do you admit it? And I mean, I'm of the position that there's a danger of cynicism that runs in the atheist position.
Yeah, no, certainly.
The
I
community.
Would, yeah,
there's
I would
a bit
certainly.
Of cynicism, there's a bit of like
a wall, a closed
sure,
door, a
sure.
slamming shut of the gate.
Does
yeah.
that endanger the possibility for those? Because it sounds like personally, you're okay with someone identifying spiritually.
Yeah, well, certainly I am. Certainly, I'm okay with that. With one significant caveat, which is, you know, let's try to view these things in the scope that doesn't evoke the supernatural. And that's important to me because I think that once we open the gates to thinking in a way where we suddenly don't require evidence or facts to justify our thoughts, everything becomes murky. The water is mud. We can no longer see clearly.
Why do we have to put it under the mic? I mean, why?
Well,
with a personal experience, how it's such a thing that is relative. It really is. Because how are you going to weigh out even you in saying that you've had transcendent experiences?
Oh, absolutely.
How are you?
Very powerful.
How are you going to explain that to somebody else? How are you going to bring that to then be kind of scrubbed against
yeah.
this
We have very powerful tools. Neuroscience is growing in leaps and bounds to describe these esoteric processes that are right behind your eyes, right between your ears. We are learning more and more about the fundamentals that make us who we are.
I think there's...
And to me, that is the magic. That is the supernatural.
Absolutely. It's the metaphorical supernatural.
Yeah.
It's the hidden.
I mean, people are working on things in neuroscience and in quantum mechanics that you may as well call it, you may as well call it supernatural.
It's good stuff.
Except, you know, I hate to be trite, but it harkens the,
There's things, just like there's things...
Reality is stranger than fiction, sure. You know?
There's things in quantum physics that are not exactly is and is not. And I'm not saying that to oversimplify, but there's simply a case where something...
It's probabilistic.
There's you know, Schrodinger's cat,
yeah,
whatever.
Right.
Dead, alive, it's sometimes whatever. It's both until you observe it.
Right. Keep in mind that's really just a thought experiment. To describe the way that quantum mechanical experiments are carried out.
I just think there's a level of that in personal experience where there's something that, as being unresolved, it's very easy to kind of speak in a metaphorical way.
Yeah,
it's very easy to speak in a relativistic way.
As humans...
And as soon as you break it down, it's just not... It just doesn't translate well.
This metaphorical and poetic outlook has served... extensively in our human history to help us make sense of the world around us in a very pragmatic and practical way. I mean, all we are mammals on the planet. We were here, you know, we had to survive, we had to throw stones at fucking squirrels and shit. We had to chase animals with bow and arrows.
Yes.
We had to, you know, so in other words, it is absolutely not intuitive to us to understand the world the way it actually is. That's not the point. That, like, kind of like what you were saying, you don't care what's in the soup. You just care that the soup tastes good in the end. And that's exactly how evolution has programmed our brains. We aren't programmed to ascertain the actual real fundamental mechanics of the world around us. We are programmed to survive within it. That's what matters to us. But now that we've moved past hunter-gatherers, we had the agricultural revolution, the industrial revolution. You know, mere survival is, for most of us, not the only thing that we're concerned about. We've moved on. And so we find ourselves in advanced mathematics, and we find ourselves in neuroscience, in ways of thinking that are counterintuitive to our natural programming.
So let's kind of cut down to the baseline.
Sure.
What is a efficient or productive society? What exists there? I mean, to say, what is wrong with our current state of spirituality? Our current state of religion? Can religion and spirituality exist in a modern time or in a future world?
I don't think it's good for us.
I
really think that it's got its foot on the brakes, and it has gullible minds wrapped up in ways of thinking that end up contributing less, you know, to their progress as individuals and as societies, as cultures.
I think there's a need there. I think there's a need in the human experience
in order
to capture that wonder, in order to capture that hyper experience that we tend to have, especially whether you're an artist or whether you're sensitive to these things or whether what have you.
It's kind of like asking...
It's
kind of like asking, was Mother Teresa a force for good in the world? No, she was not. She was obviously not a force for good in the world. She was a total facade representative for the Catholic organization.
If you think I'm going to throw my lot with her, starting from the wrong analogy.
I'm not strawmanning you or anything. I'm just saying that this is an analogy where, you know, most people take it on faith that Mother Teresa was a wonderful human being. And the fact of the matter is she ran death camps where people had no hopes of recovering and would only get sick and die. So... And it's in that same sense that religion drives backwards ideas, that dogma, That's really the problem with religion. The real problem with religion is dogma and outdated, backwards ways of thinking.
I don't think it's necessary for that to be inherent in religion and by extension spirituality. I think one, you can have spirituality without religion. Religion is
I'm on board with that.
It's a set of beliefs. It's a set of maybe predetermined idolatry. It's a
dogma.
Set of dogma. There's dogma, of course. Yeah. There's
this is the truth, and let's not worry about why it's true.
Sometimes.
This is just the way it is, and let's not bother ourselves with figuring out why or how or
that's
maybe
how it's
or,
been,
what, or that, whether or not it's even true.
Sure, but that's how it's been. We're living in a modern time where the world is our oyster, and I don't think we have to be anchored down by that. Now, I do believe, even looking over history,
sure.
There is examples where religion isn't like that.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is there can be, just like there's an evolution of our understanding of the world. There is a measured evolution. I think
we're
no longer
the center of the universe.
Yeah,
the world is no longer flat.
I think we don't have to have religion that becomes this exclusionary, sometimes elitist, sometimes oligarchy kind of, this is our truth, and part of our truth is we are better than this, therefore we can judge you endlessly. Harm, genocide, all these horrible things. I think religion can evolve. I see that it's even in the past.
Well, I mean, let's look. I mean, Christians have done a magnificent job of reformation. In the Western world, in the United States, we're no longer burning witches, drowning witches, this sort of thing. We've come a long way. They've come a long way.
Sure. We can't say that for most of the certain parts of the world.
And in fact, humans, by and large, have enough sense over time to start ignoring the flagrant and
because it just doesn't work.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible, like, you know, that's really nasty stuff that people don't, they ignore it. They pen it out.
Well, they have to.
And they focus on the good stuff. So, like, given enough time, intuitively, despite religion, we can have a good set of ethics. So,
all I'm arguing is this. Well, not all are, but what I'm arguing is this in terms of spirituality. I believe one is spirituality has nothing to do with religion. I think you can be an atheist and have a spiritual existence, as in you could be okay with
spiritual experience. Be spiritual without religion, but I think religion requires a spiritual element. What do you think?
I don't think so.
You don't think that religion requires a spiritual element?
No. I mean, for one, Satanism is a religion. It's very secular religion for most, and it could be very mystical for some. It could be spiritual for some. There could be a spirituality and secularism at the same time. Satanism is a perfect example of that. In fact, I think in many ways, Satanism runs in line with a lot of Eastern religions. As in, it can be you don't have to have a central deity, but you can have one, at least in the beginning. Now, we've kind of moved away from that, but in the beginning, with Satanism, you can be theistic. As long as you uphold a certain philosophical idea, you cannot believe. You can be completely atheistic and secular.
Right. You have the choice.
Okay.
You have the choice to be.
You have a choice.
Secular. Right.
Now, okay. If there are religions that have that flexibility, in as much that you can be a part of the religion but still function with others, I think it has a place in the world. And I think there's a sense of belonging that comes with religion, even though Satanism would be a church of non-joiners, as it were.
Right. It has its own paradox about it. It's own irony to it, doesn't it? Yeah, no, but sure. Like a clan of rebels, I guess. You know. Clan of spiritual rebels.
In a form.
Right.
I think there's power in that.
Well, there's certainly, being the social creatures that we are, there is certainly power in social affirmation and in being part of something bigger than yourself. We don't need religion to perform that function. And in fact, that's just one example in which if you're doing okay with a religious perspective, you could be doing at least as well, if not better, with a non-religious perspective. So any function that religion performs...
Sure.
Can be
done away with.
Except for, and here's the big hitter. Here's the big hitter in the park, because religion most religions and the afterlife is denial of death. Now, that's one thing that you do not get with atheism that religion does, atheism can't do, is say, you know, when your body fails you and you die, it's okay, fear not. You're going to join all your friends and family.
That's been a staple of the past, once again. I don't think it's necessary.
Well, I don't think it's true. But I think it's a large motivating factor which drives that fear, fear of absolute death.
Religion has been fear-driven for the majority of its life.
Right. And that's no path to clear thinking.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I argue that there can be a clear dialogue between secular and spiritual, maybe even the religious. I just feel like there's certain things that can't come to the table. We can't say that certain people are better than others based on things they can't control. That is evil. I think you can't discount others. You have to have the flexibility to understand that secular and spiritual both can come to similar truths, just interpretations can be different, so long as it doesn't circumvent and compromise the freedom of others. I think that's possible. Maybe I'm a wishful thinker, but the reason I feel that way is because in my own path, in my own understanding, I have seen religions and spiritual paths that do allow for that flexibility. I think that religion doesn't mean that flexibility doesn't have to exist there. I think that we can evolve in that regard. And have room for that. Have room to accept that, you know what, humans do want to have a connectedness.
Yeah, yeah.
They do want to connect to bigger things and each other.
Right, yeah.
And spirituality, whether it's belief in a deity in whatever form, even if it's a complex, you know, kind of psychological construct that comes to life at certain times or whatever that runs through a lot of the occult community, or even if it's very real, even if they believe in literal, I think there's room, so long as ethics is communicated, so long as you do not allow to hurt others, and that is kept in check, that eternal ethical connection to other humans, a promise to not hurt each other over things like that, I think, I don't know. There's a lot of things that give me a pessimistic ideal for the human race. But sometimes...
right. Light shines through the cracks.
And forgive me, but sometimes I think miracles can happen. Oh, man. Thank you for listening and lending your ears to Deferred Gnosis Podcast. Please, use the contact information in the description. Send us topic ideas, things you might want us to discuss, things you might want us to go to bat with, carve out a niche, that Venn diagram, as Matt so eloquently put it, reaching some ground just on the edge of the fringe. And if you are a musician, an artist, poet, please feel free to send us your recorded works. We'd be more than happy to find a place for it at the end of the show. Now, we have a penchant for the subversive, so the darker, the better. Thank you for listening.
And highest cheers from Deferred Gnosis.
Ave, hails,
as above, so below.